Welcome back to another edition of the Unofficial Guide Disney Dish Podcast with Jim Hill. It is I, Len Testa, coming back from our deep, deep turkey comas. Jim and I are here to bring you your first show of December 2015. And in order to do that, we need to bring out the man who has led the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade many, many times from the comfort of his own home, Mr. Jim Hill. Jim, how's it going?
Actually, it's interesting you bring this up because this year, thanks to the very nice folks at Macy's, Nancy and I, along with two friends, Flo Doyle and her 70-year-old mom, who was a real trooper, Sandy, we went to New York and saw the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade on 34th Street.
Did you really?
Yep.
It's a miracle.
No, it was, actually, you know, because this is right after what had happened in Paris. And honestly, Len, Nancy and I went the year of 9/11. We felt we had to do something to show our support. So we actually went down to New York City and saw the parade. We actually saw it from the top, where it kicks off Central Park West around 79th Street or thereabouts. And I was amazed the amount of security that I saw that year. This year, top that. You had policemen walking around with the equivalent of the M16s, you know, full assault rifles. And it was weird because you saw that and said, oh, good, as opposed to I'm in a scary place. Though I have to say it was an interesting moment to be sitting in the stands watching the happy clowns dance by and then suddenly having the New York counterterrorism people just walk down the line with their back totally to the parade, staring straight to the stands going, not a terrorist, not a terrorist, not
looking looking every person in the eye saying, it's kind of funny because I would actually be more creeped out by the clowns than the armed guards.
You'll love this. At one point in the parade, they actually had a group of clowns dressed as members of the press. And, you know, they had, like, the press hat on.
How would you know the difference? I'm a journalist.
No, that was actually what made it fun, because I'm sitting there taking my photos, and five of them ran over with their big inflatable cameras and were taking pictures of me, taking pictures of them. And I was thinking, my life would be so much easier if I had that outfit. I am a member of the press. Don't you see my loud plaid pants and my inflatable camera?
That's fantastic. So you went up for the parade. How was it?
We picked the one year where it was beautiful weather, 50 degrees out. We had seats. Literally, we were in the front row. Having watched this on television for years, we were about three grandstands down from where NBC was shooting. And you really become aware that at that point, it's no longer a parade. It's a television show.
Right. Yeah, people don't get this, the stuff that happens when you're watching on TV, because it is a TV show. But when you're there, it's a production.
Yeah, you'd stare 100 feet away at people who were singing and dancing on floats. And then when they came at us, because what they were literally going to do was zoom past us in 34th Street and make the turn onto, I want to say, Broadway, possibly 7th Avenue. And this is the point where people got off the floats and they started dismantling them so they could then go back to the Lincoln Tunnel and go back to the storage place that the Macy's Perutz studio maintains in Menache, New Jersey. So at that point, it's like we're getting literally over and over again, good night, folks! You know, just like, even Santa had more pressing things to do. Like, all right, wave, I gotta go.
But
it was still worth it. It was amazing. It was a bucket list thing, and I'm also kind of glad it's off the bucket list for now. Okay, did it again after what had happened in Paris, and you know, just figured that it's important to do stuff like this. It's important, you know, at a time like this to just show, okay, you know, we're going to have a normal life and we're going to do the type of stuff we always do, which in this case was go into the city and see a parade.
How were the Macy's windows decorated this year? Do you know?
There's six of them, and they are celebrating the 50th anniversary of a Charlie Brown Christmas. So you look in at Linus giving Charlie Brown advice and kids skating and Snoopy on his Sopwith camel, you know, flying at the Red Baron. It was very cute.
That's fantastic. I was in New York, and I was in Macy's the weekend after the Paris attacks. Yep. So going through Grand Central Station, we had policemen with M16s, like, out in front, not like, you know, I've got them you know, mm-hmm. to my side or anything, but they were literally holding on to it with one hand on the trigger mm-hmm. or on the. But we went to Macy's and I mentioned this because it's actually there's a New York Times article mm-hmm. on it this weekend about the wooden escalators.
Oh, it's so glad you mentioned that because I love those. That they're such a part of what I consider my childhood. Again, as a kid, to go to a department store and it's what is this magical device where the stairs disappear
and movie stairs, yeah.
But yeah, that they still have wooden escalator in the building. I wrote it multiple times because that was the nice thing about being there sitting in the grandstands. It's like, hey, you get cold, come inside. We've got coffee, we've got donuts, we've got bagels.
The other thing that amazed me is the number of places that you can eat inside Macy's. So they've got a Starbucks, they've got a juice bar, they've got a couple of restaurants.
There's actually a sort of a deli set up downstairs where, again, I'm sorry if you miss the parade. there's actually, if you go downstairs, the restaurant is actually decorated with models and props and photos from the parade.
So, is it really?
Yeah, same floor you get down to with the wooden escalator. Just hang a left and head off in that direction. I want to say it's not the stage one, but definitely worth seeking out. What I like about Macy's is it's kind of this mix of a modern, big department store. Yeah. But at the same time, it has these things that clearly say 1920s, 1930s.
That's what I liked about it, too. So first of all, I hadn't been in Macy's in probably 5 years. So mm-hmm. when we went this last time, it was to see the Christmas decorations. Yep. And I forgot that it's the largest department store in the world. 8 floors, mm-hmm. all huge. And the place was just decked out. This was, I guess, second full weekend of November. The weather had just turned cool. We were staying up on 37, so it was a short walk down, but the place was huge. The thing that I find fascinating about it is it's big enough mm-hmm. that they've got pop-up stores for, like, designers inside of Macy's. So inside of Macy's are other stores.
There's that whole, I want to say, second or third level where it's just endless series of tiny little shops.
Yes.
And circling back to the parade, they actually have a shop down on the basement level that's dedicated entirely to parade-related merch. So,
oh, that's fantastic.
Which Nancy really made a killing. So schlepped all that stuff back to the car. And speaking of cars, finally turning to our subject of today.
I was going
to
say, this show's been sponsored by.
There we go. This is our first December show, folks. So December 1st, 1958, very significant event happened. Construction of Florida's Interstate 4 begins. The last piece of this highway, like 132 miles, wouldn't be completed till 1965. But that didn't matter to Walt Disney.
That's remarkably efficient in today's terms, Jim. 7 years?
We'll get to that in a moment, but interesting you say that. But yeah, when Walt flew over the area in November of 63, it was all basically virgin land. But because the 27,000-acre parcel that he was eyeballing was bisected diagonally by this northeast-southwest four-lane highway mm-hmm. that ran from 95, over at Daytona Beach mm-hmm. all the way over to 275 in Tampa, Walt knew that this road was going to change the way people vacationed in Florida. And he was right, partially because, of course, he built Disney World right in the middle of it. I bring this up, and again, Lynn touched on the 7 years to build that, 132 miles, because this work began back in February, but they are now seriously ramping up on the six-year-long, I'm just fascinated by this name, the I-4 Ultimate Project.
It's ultimate because it can be the last one because it's supposed to go on forever. It's a massive project. I know. We wrote about it in the book. Something like 50 new overpasses, an express lane. So it's all happening roughly from, was it like Winter Park through
yeah.
Orlando? It's not constant. It's not all along I-4. It really is just the area around Disney and Universal.
It runs from west of Kirkman Road in Orange County all the way out to State Road 434 in Seminole Calm County. It's a 21-mile stretch, and Len's right. I mean, we're talking about 4 new express lanes, 2 in each direction, 13 widened bridges, 74 replaced bridges, and 53 new bridges. One of the reasons I'm bringing this up is because for a lot of snowbirds who went home before this got serious, they're coming down. These are folks who typically, let's make the last push. Mm-hmm. We'll be there in the morning, not realizing that so much of this work is being done basically from the late evening, early morning hours.
I've had a couple of chances to try and drive this mm-hmm. lately while construction is happening. Yeah, you're right. It's from like 10 or 11 p.m. Yep. until 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. You might as well not even attempt it. I waited 90 minutes at one point to get through about a quarter of a mile of the interstate. They were doing asphalt. So they were trying to dig mm-hmm. up this piece of land and then put some asphalt on it. But once they put the asphalt on, it has to cool. So it took us, like I said, I think I went about a quarter of a mile in 90 minutes. The helpful thing is that my GPS told me that I should exit right after I pass the... hey, there's a traffic delay up ahead. I know I'm in it. It was predicting 5 seconds ago really, really well. But yeah, it's just a massive construction project. The other thing that I loved was the originally it was supposed to be done in 2019. Then in January, when it was supposed to start, it was delayed by 3 weeks, and they said, oh yeah, we're going to end in 2021. So a three-week delay turned into 2 years on the back end. We should be in the construction business, Jim.
Absolutely. And just this week, out by Kirkman Road, they're doing rolling roadblocks, you know, from 12 midnight to 4 a.m. because they're taking down power lines.
So, on I-4.
On I-4. I guess to distract the poor people who are trapped in traffic right now. Again, all of this talk of cars and construction makes me think back to December of 1997, which was when a group of extremely passionate and dedicated Disney fans became a months-long in-park protest, all with the hope that they could convince Disney company officials to save Mr. Toad.
This was in Walt Disney World.
This was at Walt Disney World. In order to understand why Disney behaved the way they did during this period, you first have to look back at how Disney handled the September 1994 closure of the Fantasyland attraction that was directly across the way from Mr. Toad's Wild Ride, and that's 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
Which is to say, not well in terms of handling it. Makes Watergate looks like it was run by professionals, that sort of thing.
It started out so innocently. I mean, August of 1994, the officials at the Magic Kingdom definitely had plans to close 20,000 Leagues. They did for 23 years, they'd operated this attraction. It had been an operational and maintenance nightmare. The subs had to be closed for months at a time whenever it went down for rehab. Bright, hot Florida sun bleached all the coral or, you know, caused the cables that held the fish in place to snap.
Yep.
Also, factoring into the subs were ridiculously low capacity, hard to unload, offload. And not only that, the lagoon leaked, which caused this amazing black mold problem down in the utilidors, especially in the female cast member locker room. So it was one of these things where it's like, okay, we have to do something about this. Now, July 4th, 1994, over in Paris, at Disneyland Paris to be specific, Les Mysteries du Nautilus, which is French for the Mysteries of the Nautilus, had just opened at that park's Magic Kingdom. And this was a walkthrough, which was kind of a throwback to what they'd had at Disneyland back in 1955, when they had literally an empty building mm-hmm. in Tomorrowland. And Walt said, grab the props from 20,000 Leagues, we're going to throw them into that building, and this is an attraction. And it actually sat there till December of 66. In the classic Disney case, a temporary attraction that lasted 10 years.
Oh, yeah. We've both done the one in Paris. We say it's a prop, but it's actually a very detailed walkthrough. It's pretty nice.
It is. The Imagineers had just thrown open the doors to this thing, and Disney World officials had been over, eyeballed it, and it's like, okay, this could work. Mm-hmm. We'd just go with a straight clone of what they'd built in Paris. At least on paper, it was going to be cheaper to operate, easier to maintain, and given that they'd constantly be able to push people through this walk through six rooms, mm-hmm. It would have a greater hourly capacity than the sub ride that, you know, had been at Disney World since, you know, 71.
What's not to like, right? Okay.
Yeah. So on paper, this is a good idea. Magic Kingdom officials fully plan to do this. So this is August of 94. There's a newsletter that's basically a one-sheet pamphlet that's published for the Magic Kingdom called the Main Street Gazette.
Yep.
We're talking 94, so this is predating most of the internet. You know,
right.
It wasn't a question of go to the cast member portal and read something. So you'd walk in, and here's a pile of these one sheets, and this is the info for the day about what's going to happen. And in this, they put a notice that said that we're going to be closing the attraction for good on September 5th. So, which is why on August 30th, we'd like every cast member who works at the attraction or has previously worked at 20,000 Leagues to show up in the morning for a commemorative photo. So sure enough, you know, they do that. About 30, 40 guys show up and, you know, they get in a ladder and they take a picture with the sub in the background and it's a beautiful shot. And so, and again, I'm living down in Orlando at this time and I have cast member friends who call me and one of them actually comes by the house and drops off a copy of the Main Street Gazette. Like, you're into this crud. You would probably be interested in this. And I'm friendly at that point with Leslie Doolittle, who's the reporter for the Orlando Sentinel who covers tourism. And okay. So I call Leslie and say, hey, you want to give you a heads up. 20,000 Leagues is closing on the 5th, and it might be a fun story for the Sentinel if you went out that night and wrote it one last time and maybe, you know, interviewed folks. And Leslie was like, yeah, cool, that would be fun. So she and her husband, who's a photographer for the Associated Press, actually go over to the Magic Kingdom that night. And sure enough, there's this long line of not only 20,000 League fans, because the word's gotten out, but also cast members who've worked in the park who want to get one last ride in. Yeah. And she gets this wonderful story full of great quotes and fond remembrances. And her husband gets these killer shots of the last sub headed out and people celebrating the sub. And so the very next day, they put it in the Sentinel. And the paper's out for about 5 minutes before Disney World Management calls furious for how dare you print that the subs are closing. You know, we never said that.
I mean, we never said that to you.
Yeah, and this is where it got interesting, because it turns out Magic Kingdom Management hadn't told Disney World Management yet that they were finally going to close the subs, that this was the plan.
Really? Hello, right hand? It's the left hand. Anything going on there? No, nothing.
Well, the people actually run the full resort, mm-hmm. you know, are constantly obviously aware of the stuff that makes people come back. And they knew from their surveys that one of the attractions that people were extremely fond of was 20,000 Leagues, whereas from the Magic Kingdom that actually had to operate and maintain the subs and take money annually out of its budget, this attraction was a pain in the ass.
Right.
So they were looking to deep six it, to kill it.
Ah, deep six it. It's funny.
You know.
And so remember the, I think we talked about this before, but remember that the subs came about because from Disneyland, Disney was competing with, was it Ocean Park? The thing that CBS had opened
Pacific
up.
Pacific Ocean Park.
Pacific yes, Ocean the, Park. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it has a long history with Disneyland. Okay.
There's this back and forth between the Sentinel and Disney World Management. And I actually get a call from Leslie, and it's like, what's going on here? And so I get in the car, I drive down to the Sentinel offices, I bring the copy of the newsletter, which they print, take to the Xerox machine, and then messenger it over to the Disney World Management offices, which at that time were in the Sun Bank building directly across from Walt Disney World Shopping Village. And first of all, they're not thrilled that this supposedly internal document has gotten out. And it was one of these things where Leslie goes back and it's, yeah, the internal document that you hand out to 30,000 employees each day. This is a state secret. Yeah.
Exactly. Everyone. Shh.
And so finally, Walt Disney World just basically sort of holds a gun to the Sentinel's head and says, look, we pay you guys tens of thousands of dollars in advertising revenue. You need to retract this. So they don't actually retract it. They write an article that says that there is some amount of confusion, that it's not closing forever, it's closing for a rehab, a lengthy rehab. Leslie, who just won't let go of the story, you know.
God bless her.
You know, for the next 2 years, Disney tap dances. All right, so there's a February 96 article. This is literally how Leslie, you know, big news for giant squid fans. Walt Disney World plans to have 20,000 Leagues back in operation this summer, and just talks about how they've got a new plan, but at this point, they're going to stick with the original operating system, and they're going to stick with the original theme. And so here's Al Weiss, you know, again, Leslie twitting them, but Walt Disney World's captain, Al Weiss, we're still trying to finalize plans, but we will go through and do a rehab and add a few surprises. However, by April of 96, Leslie having fun with him, Walt Disney World put 20,000 Leagues back in dry dock. We'll weigh options. And you're going to love this line, Len. You know, just Walt Disney World's plans to reopen 20,000 Leagues this summer have been scuttled. We squid you not. You know,
go ahead, double pun.
You know, they found out the Magic Kingdom's given every possible information, piece of information, what it's going to cost to rehab this thing, to get it back up to speed. It's been sitting there, and the lagoon has continued to leak. And there's also kind of an infamous story of during this period, Mike Ovitz, who had come on temporarily at Disney to sort of be the second in command after Frank Wells died, he was looking for something to do because Eisner invited this all-powerful commander of CEA to come on and be his second in command at Disney and then promptly wouldn't power share. You know, so Ovitz is sitting around his office looking for something to do, and Ovitz finds out that there's this letter-writing campaign to save 20,000 leagues. And so he actually gets on the Disney corporate jet and goes to Florida. Okay. And it's like, I'm going to solve this problem. I'm the all-powerful. Okay. Mike Ovitz. And so here's the second-in-command shows up, checks into the Grand Flow, and says, all right, take me to see this 20,000 leagues ride. I want to see what it is, and I will figure out how to fix this.
Okay.
And the head, you know, the guy who's in charge of the Magic Kingdom at this point, who Bruce Lavelle, lets the people know on that side of the park. And it's just sort of like, all right, you know, I want this problem to go away. All right. But at the same time, Mr. Ovitz has traveled 3,000 miles on the Disney corporate jet to come out here and look at this thing. So it's just one of these things where they go through the entire sub fleet to find the one sub that's in the worst possible condition, chugs and rattles, and to sort of stack the deck even more. They have a cast member go in and grab a couple of bottles of buckets of water from the lagoon and splash them down. Inside.
There's another cast member trying to stick his finger down his own throat to throw up to give that special smell inside the sub. You just know it. Yeah, this is why Ovitz left the company, isn't it? This thing right here.
Honestly, they sandbagged him. And even the guy who's up in the sail, who's driving this thing, is under orders, like, not smooth. All right,
he's doing shots of vodka beforehand. He's like, he's talking in Russian. He's like, oh, okay.
You know, and so the nurses, they send Ovitz out on the boat. He does a ride through, and it's like, oh, God, this is a piece of crap. Okay, you know, I understand it now. Yes, we need to get rid of this. But it isn't till 97 that the company finally is willing to admit that they're not bringing it back. And even then, they don't issue an official announcement.
Yeah, you know, refurbishment, you know, seasonal.
Yeah.
It goes seasonal, you know, yeah, right?
As late as January 1997, they're still denying it. This is Bill Warren to the Sentinel. I mean, again, Leslie just wouldn't let this go.
Yeah, I love
it. So it's like, there has been no decision. It's going to remain closed. We can figure out a new strategy. And the new strategy was eventually, we're getting rid of it. One of the other reasons that the folks who ran the Magic Kingdom were doing this is that there's this weird dichotomy. People come back to experience things at the Magic Kingdom at Walt Disney World that they previously experienced, you know, that they've enjoyed with other family members, and you want to give them that.
Yep.
But at the same time, Disney wants to be dynamic. And let's face it, by 1997, Disney had just had two huge animated successes. We have the Lion King from 1994, and we have Pixar's Toy Story. You know, first CG film, 1995. Then to factor in that Aladdin, which was released in 92, is still holding on, still strong. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, Disney Consumer Products has, over this period of time, has turned Winnie the Pooh into a powerhouse. As an IP, he's actually dwarfing Mickey at this point. So people who are running the Magic Kingdom, a most popular park at the Walt Disney World Resort, want to get these IPs into that park, which is why October of 1997, they announced that, hey, we've got three new projects headed to the Magic Kingdom. We're looking to replace Mr. Toad's Wild Ride with a new Winnie the Pooh theme ride through. We're going to take out Take Flight, the former Dream Flight attraction that was sponsored by Delta, and we're going to change that into the Buzz Lightyear Space Ranger Spin. And we're going to take the Enchanted Tiki Room, you know, which is the exact same show that's been presented since this attraction debuted. Never mind the version that debuted at the Magic Kingdom in 71. This is the same show that debuted at Disneyland in 63.
Yeah.
You know, and it's in desperate need of or an update. I mean, yes, it's called the Tropical Serenade, but it's the Enchanted Tiki Room.
The three substitutions were Mr. Toad for Winnie the Pooh.
Right.
Dream Flight, Take Flight, which for Buzz Lightyear, and the original version of the Tiki Room for under new management. How many of us right now, all of you listeners out there right now, how many of you would switch them all back right now if you could.
Well, you know, in a weird sort of way, the tiki fans got their wish. You know,
exactly.
And in fact, there's always been a certain question about the fire there.
That's a whole other story.
Yeah. That sort of, you know, gave them the opportunity to actually revisit. You know, and again, we'll get that to that.
Dreamflight is its own. We got to do our own show on Dreamflight. But okay, so they decide they're going to get rid of this Mr. Toad ride, which, let's face it, it was a short, right, Mr. Toad?
It was the very last package feature that Walt did. I want to say it was 1948. And remember, he initially talked about doing a full-length Wind in the Willows movie.
Right, okay.
Kind of lost his nerve, and so he then married that to The Legend of Sleepy Hollow, okay. And that became, what, The Adventures of Ichabod Mr. Toad.
Okay, and package feature, that's the word I was looking for. Mm-hmm. Okay, but Disney at this point in the mid-90s, mid to late 90s, they're not selling Mr. Toad merchandise. There's no Mr. Toad. Okay.
Not at all, but if you actually drill down into this, okay, Dick Nunes, who retired as chairman of Disney Parks and Attractions back in May of 1999, and I want you folks to remember that because we're going to circle back on that piece of information, but he was riding herd on development, you know, who's one of the people who were really, you know, key to what ended up in the Magic Kingdom when it opened, you know, at Walt Disney World in 71.
Okay.
And he was the one who turns to Rolly Crump, who's designing a lot of the attractions for that park, and says, look, Mr. Toad's Wild Ride at Disneyland is one of our most popular attractions.
Yep.
And we're going to get a lot of people to Walt Disney World, so we can't just have one Mr. Toad. I need you to figure out a way to increase the capacity of this. And that's how Rolly came up with the idea of the mirrored tracks, the A track and the B track.
I forgot about this. Yeah, there were two sides.
They put a lot of time, a lot of thought, a lot of money into Toad. And in fact, as recently as 1993, they did a rehab on the ride to increase capacity. They actually swapped out the original smaller ride vehicles and created these bigger, larger Toad vehicles to hold four adults rather than, you know, just two adults at any one time. So it was a ride that they'd actually spent money on recently to increase capacity. And yes, you're right. They weren't selling Toad IP, you know, or they weren't selling Toad plush or T-shirts or that sort of thing. And it honestly made more sense to find a way to shoehorn Pooh into that park.
Sure.
But what they hadn't counted on was, it was kind of a weird 1-2 punch. And you will love this aspect of it. Okay, so this is October 22nd, 1997. On October 23rd, 1997, over in what was then Disney MGM Studios, they're holding a press event for the soon-to-air on the Disney Sunday Night Movie, the film TV movie version of A Tower of Terror.
Okay.
All right. So who's in the park that day but Steve Guttenberg?
I was going to say Steve Guttenberg.
Steve Guttenberg and Christine Dunst. All right. And the reporter from the Sentinel, who had just been in the park the previous day, I want to say Jill Joyner Spitz, to attend the This Is What We're Going to Do with the Magic Kingdom, you know, is over there chatting with these two and mentions it casually to and Steve and Kirsten are like, no, we love Mr. Toad. Oh, no. And Kirsten in the interview actually says, save Mr. Toad. All right. And
oh, no.
Yes.
How much more do you love Steve Guttenberg now?
Well, it starts to go south at this point because, you know, that's out there reported the very next day. And meanwhile, down in Miami, there's this gentleman called Jeff Moscott. He's a 26-year-old guy, huge Toad fan. Mm-hmm. And the very next day, he set up an online campaign to save Toad.
This is one of the earliest memories I have of online Disney stuff.
Really?
Yeah, 97. Yeah, so I'd been probably active since 95 or something like that, but yeah.
Yeah, and this is where Disney starts to learn about the web. This was the 1-2 punch because you have to understand that this is going on the East Coast, the Save Mr. Toad effort. Meanwhile, on the West Coast, going into 97, as the Main Street Electrical Parade is shut down and is being replaced by Light Magic, which turns out to be a disaster, and you know, and much of the negative coverage of that Disneyland parade is fed off of Al Lutz, who at that time is running the Disneyland Information Guide. And that's actually one of the huge turning points for the online, you know, Disney web community. That was where a lot of the mainstream press turned for their information about, well, why is this $40 million parade not working at Disney? And Al was like, oh, well, let me tell you. But yeah, it was this 1-2 punch of these toad people, and that's how Disney refers to them.
The toad people?
These toad people. In fact, okay. One of the reasons we're telling this story in December, folks, is Jeff holds his first in-park toad in the first week of December and tells these terrific stories about, you know, he puts the word out online and maybe 15-20 people show up, and he's made up green shirts to save Mr. Toad, and he's printed up postcards and flyers. The weird thing is, as this relatively small group is in front of Mr. Toad, just sort of trying to decide what they should do, there is the largest group of janitors ever seen in Disney history out in front.
Just coincidentally to clean some stuff up around town.
That's right. You know, and all of them have earpieces, you know, and
oh, sure.
When the very first person just walks up and questions them, and Jeff hands him a leaflet, there are two Disney suits immediately beside him, and it's like, I'm sorry, sir, you can't hand out literature in the park, and you
know, it's time to leave. Yeah.
Yeah. And that then becomes the story, because again, it's a relatively small, quiet group that gets overreacted to by Disney.
Yep. Of course, Disney made them famous. Yep.
Yeah, and then it just goes on. It drags on. They make this announcement in October. Disney doesn't know what to do. I mean, you know, just that. You know, that they thought, we're bringing Winnie the Pooh to the park, the character that everybody loves. They had never anticipated there might be fans or go online, and there was no way for Disney to get its arms around.
They couldn't control the message.
When it gets right down to it, Disney doesn't officially confirm that Toad is going to shut down till September 2nd, 1998. And even then, they've only given folks 5 days' notice, you know, that the attraction will close on the 7th of September. And so Jeff and a group of dedicated folks actually make it to the park for that day. And what they describe is so surreal. When you go on the A side, you're in Toad Hall, you go through the trophy room, pass through the kitchen, then you zoom by this gypsy camp and are on a one-way street into Town Square, then Winky's Tavern, and eventually you train tunnel and you make it to Hill. And meanwhile, on the B side, same thing. Only you go through the library, you're out in the barnyard, you also go through Town Square, but now you're in prison. And then train tunnel in Hell. In every single one of these rooms, as you drove through the attraction, was a Disney employee. Standing, not in the shadows, literally standing in the room. Because Disney was terrified that somebody was going to get out of a Toad vehicle and attempt to chain themselves. and again, you have to understand this. Basically, this entire ride is plywood flats, so it's like
they could just saw off the plywood and walk everybody away. I mean, it's not like you're chaining yourself to concrete. Okay, all right.
It was a PR nightmare, and of course, the problem once again, this is Disney not anticipating that the Imagineers would love this. You know that.
Oh. Oh, really? Okay.
They would think this was the funniest thing on the planet.
Oh, my God, yeah, totally.
As soon as they shut down the attraction, what do the Imagineers do? They grab every single recognizable Toad prop and bring it back to Imagineering, where to this day they decorate offices. You can walk through 1401 Flowers Street and see plywood flats or the little red devils, you know, all over the cubicles. This was the beloved attraction that we shut down, and let's hang on to a piece of it. Now we have to sneak in tributes. And so that's why, for example, when you roll through Owl's House on the Winnie the Pooh ride, if you look down to the floor to the right, there's actually a painting of Owl being handed the deed of Toad Hall by Toad. And, and if you look to the left side, there's this image of Pooh shaking hands with Mole. It was one of these things where they weren't going to ignore it, even though Disney World Management was desperate to put this in their rearview mirror. They were going to put it in the front window and have fun with it. And in fact, I think the one tribute in the park that to this day, I said, I can't believe they do this. But if you go over to the pet cemetery at the Haunted Mansion, there's a Toad statue. I mean, literally, it's a statue.
That's right. Of Toad. Yeah, when you're exiting the Haunted Mansion on the left.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And supposedly, if you can actually get up the hillside...
Don't encourage anyone.
I
remember the Mexico pyramid thing. Okay.
Yeah, we don't want people climbing. But if you got a really good lens on your camera,
okay.
Supposedly there's a poem on the base of the pedestal that is something about the poo in the road that stopped Toad.
That's fantastic.
If you're wondering why Disney hasn't yet announced when Disney Quest is officially closing, or for that matter, think about with Maelstrom. Think about how they handled that.
Yeah, would they have like a 2 weeks notice, something like that?
Yeah, let's be fair here. They have done closures since where, you know, for example, Snow White's Scary Adventure, where, you know, there's that young man who...
Ben,
yeah. They were nice enough to accommodate Ben, understanding that, you know, his love for that attraction. You know, they gave him plenty of time, plenty of notice. This is why Disney does what it does. And this is why, even to this day, when you think about this is a company with D23, with a fan organization, they still have issues with the way people, in regard to when they close attraction. They want to give the fans what they want, but at the same time, don't you want new stuff?
Yeah, exactly.
You know.
And I think a lot of people do. But a lot of people use the old attractions, especially their favorites, as sort of like a jumping off point. Like, okay, you know, Seven Dwarfs Mine Train is just opening, you know, Walt Disney World. You're not going to go there for the one attraction. But if you think to yourself, well, I'll go visit Haunted Mansion, which I love, and I'll go see Pirates of the Caribbean, which I love, you know, and I'll do these other new things. Then it becomes, then it becomes a vacation. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what that's sometimes what Disney forgets. The other thing, I think, is when you look at 50 million people visiting Walt Disney World, even if it's something like Mr. Toad is the favorite ride or a favorite ride of 1%, right? That's still 500,000 people. That's a lot. It only takes a few of them to mount an online protest. I mean,
this is true.
Yeah.
This is true. Well, anyway, as I look at the clock here, we've been recording for 45 minutes, so that means if you're in I-4 traffic, you're halfway now to the ramp.
Exactly. You'll be home in a few more days.
It's gonna be
fantastic. All right. Well, this is fantastic, Jim. We're gonna have to talk about, we've never done this before, but you mentioned it on there. We should really talk about the history of if you had wings.
We'll put that on the list, folks. We'll make that early 2016. How about that?
Fantastic. Jim, thanks very much. You've been listening to the Unofficial Guide to Disney Dish Podcast with Jim Hill. We are produced by Aaron Adams. Please go on to iTunes and Stitcher and rate our show and tell us what you would like to hear next. For Jim, this is Len. We will see you on the next show.
Take care, guys.